podcasting from Nashville, Tennessee. This is Keep Asking, the podcast that helps you dig deeper and wider into the research providing insights into today's church and culture. I'm here today with my colleagues Scott McConnell and Casey Oliver to talk about adoption and foster care, and we have a very special guest with us. It's one of our former colleagues, Micah Fries. Welcome, Micah.
Hey, Lizette. It's good to see, or good not to see, I guess, to talk to you and Scott and Casey.
Excellent. And I forgot to welcome Scott and Casey back. Welcome.
Glad to be here with Micah.
Thanks.
And you?
Yes. Micah, tell us real quick before we jump in, tell us a little bit about who you are, your big important title, how you're changing the world, in just a few words.
Yeah, so I'm the pastor at Brainerd Baptist Church in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and that's mostly it. And we're having a lot of fun. We love Chattanooga. It's an amazing city, and the church has been just, it's been really encouraging. We're getting to do some really cool things with mission, especially globally, and so that's been really fun.
Excellent. Well, as you know, we're talking today about adoption, foster care, and I'm a huge fan of adoption because I was adopted, and I thoroughly enjoy being adopted, though I guess I don't know what life would have been like not adopted, but very thankful for that. And Mike is our guest, as giving us the perspective of a pastor, but also as that of an adoptive parent.
That's so. Right, yeah. Yeah, we love being adoptive parents. We're big advocates for adoption.
Yes. So I'm sure we're going to have a lot in common. Mainly, one thing I always like to point out is that when my parents picked me up at the adoption agency in 1969, I was a whopping $650.
Is that right? Our adoption cost a little bit more than that. Yes. I wish our adoption was $650.
Yes, that's always kind of a fun, random tidbit. But so we're going to be talking about some data that we have, but then also what churches are doing. We surveyed 110 American churchgoers and what they see their churches doing. So Scott and Casey, what are churches, what did we learn churchgoers say their churches are doing?
Actually, it was 1,010.
What did I say?
110.
110? Oh, I'm so sorry.
You were thinking small.
You could say something about Lizette's college education and
I need you to back up the bus right now. I was looking right at the number. I have it correct. I don't know why I said that. All right, 1,010. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
But so we found that out of those 1,010 churchgoers, 25% said that a member provided foster care. 17% said they saw a member adopting a new child from the U.S. And 15% said that they saw a member adopting a new child from another country at their church in the last year.
That I don't know about you, Micah, but that seemed like a lot of folks involved in foster care and adoption in churches across the country. Do those numbers surprise you at all, or did you expect to see a lot of church members involved?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I, the numbers maybe don't surprise me. I think what surprises me is that adoption, when I talk to adoption experts who are around the country, they tell me that the number of adoptive parents is actually decreasing right now. And I think that's the number that particularly surprises me. I'm encouraged that, you know, a quarter of church attenders say that somebody in their church, what'd you say, was involved in foster care, I think.
Yes.
Was the 25% mm-hmm. number. Yeah. And so, I mean, that's encouraging to me. So when you say 25%, is that 25% know of someone who's involved in foster care, or 25% are actually engaged in foster care?
Know of someone at their church in the last year.
That number surprised me as much. I think the question I would ask is how many are actually engaged in foster care and adoption themselves? I think those would be the numbers that would concern me more so.
Sure. When you think about child care and adoption of this type, you know, these aren't kind of right in the center of the gospel message. They're not in the center of discipling people. So why should churches be concerned about this, other than knowing that obviously there are children who need homes? But what makes it something that a church should give attention to?
Okay, so let's talk about right at the center of the gospel, because I do think you're right, Scott, but I think it is an immediate and explicit ramification of the gospel. Mm-hmm. So by that, I mean, you don't have to believe or you don't have to practice adoption to be a follower of Jesus, right? So it's not at the center of the gospel. It's not necessary to gospel belief. But the Bible does seem to be pretty explicit that caring for orphans in need is a ramification of the gospel. That's not an implicit, that's an explicit, you know, from the book of James. The pure and undefiled religion before God is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress. And I think the church does naturally tend toward caring for widows at a level that they don't naturally tend toward caring for orphans. I think there's probably some good reasons for that. I think one, churches tend to have widows in them when they may not have orphans in them. And so they're more present, out of sight, out of mind. And so the orphan, you know, the orphan children, that's a struggle for them. I think widows are adults, and they can speak up for themselves, and they can communicate when they have needs. And so while we may not care for widows as well as we should, we often care for them more than we do for orphans. And so it's not central. It's not at the center of the gospel. You're right about that. But it is maybe a central ramification of the gospel is a better way to say it. And so churches theologically ought to care about it because the Bible's explicit. I think theologically, though, churches ought to care about it because the gospel is conveyed in adoption, right? Mm-hmm. And so when we adopt, we are mirroring the activity of God in the way he cares for us. I've said that God loves us so intensely that he both created and adopted us. So it's as if God is our father in two separate and yet very powerful ways. So he created us, and so he's sort of a father figure in that he created all the people on the planet. And then those who believe in him, who trust in him, are adopted into his family because of our rebellion causing the need for us to be adopted. So it's almost as if Christ has, or God has claimed us twice, if that makes sense. And so when we adopt children who do not have parents, we are mirroring the fatherly love of God, and we are reflecting the adoptive concern of God in the world around us. So I think churches ought to care about it theologically. I think there are practical and economic reasons why the church ought to care about it. I mean, if you look at the data for children who age out of the foster care system in the U.S., the likelihood is that they're not going to get a college education. The likelihood is that they're going to struggle with incarceration. I mean, it's not just a high number. It's, in some of these senses, a majority of these children run towards these ultimately life-threatening situations that reduce their lifespan, reduces their capacity to earn income, have families, and so on. And so I think there are theological, economic, sociological reasons why the church ought to care about these things. And there's a whole lot more I could say about it, but maybe that summarizes it.
That's good.
As a one of the things that we asked, one of the options they could select, 14% said that they saw in their church leaders encouraging families to consider adoption. 12% said they saw leaders encourage families to provide foster care. As a pastor and also as an adoptive parent, what kind of cautions do you feel in when you want to encourage and bring awareness in your church, but also knowing, hey, this may not be what everybody needs to be doing, so that there's that immediate ramification of the gospel you were talking about, but I'm assuming there's a part of you that's like, hey, I'm not saying everybody is qualified, emotionally healthy enough to be doing this. How do you balance that, getting the word out, but cautiously?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Lizette. I would say that everybody in the church ought to be involved in adoption and foster care, but not everybody should adopt and foster, if that makes sense. And so this is one of those things that we can pray for, we can give to, we can provide support around adoptive and foster care parents, but not everybody is going to be able to adopt and foster. I mean, it's a hard, painful, emotionally challenging, family relationship taxing, you know, financially expensive process. And I think it's Lizette, you can sympathize with this. You and I both served for a time in West Africa, and you can't function well in West Africa unless you know that God has called you there, because after the new wears off and mm-hmm. the cool wears off, the call of God is at some level, the only thing that keeps you there. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard. I would say adoption is in some senses the same way. I mean, you've got to have a sense of calling from the Lord, because there's no such thing as an easy adoption. And one of the things we've got to remember is that every child who is in a foster care or adoptive situation, even a child who was abandoned as an infant and never knew their parents, everyone comes with emotional trauma. Every child from an adoptive or foster care situation comes with emotional trauma. And many of them come with physical trauma as well that they're having to deal with. And so that requires some sort of education, a support system around you, some financial capacity, and the emotional stability at some level, not to mention spiritual depth, to be able to kind of walk through that. And so you're right. Every person shouldn't adopt or foster, but I do think every Christian can be involved in fostering and adopting in the same way that every Christian ought to be involved in mission, even if every Christian is not packing up and moving halfway around the world.
As we presented this list of seven things, asking churchgoers if they had noticed their church being involved in them, 45% of these church attendees said their church isn't doing any of them, and another 15% weren't sure. And so if those not sures also were not doing anything, or that means 6 out of 10 churches are not encouraging families to consider adoption or foster care. Why do you think many church leaders are not engaging on this topic and encouraging folks to be involved?
Okay, so that's a really good question, Scott. I think first, let's say why I don't think they're not doing it, if I can be doubly redundant. I don't think it's because they don't care about orphans. I don't think it's because they think this is somebody else's problem. I don't think those are the things. And I think we could have a tendency to say, well, you're not doing it. What's wrong with you? I think the truth of the matter is orphans tend to be out of sight, out of mind. I mean, they're in special facilities, group homes, they're in orphanages, that sort of environment. And the average evangelical church is, what, 85 people on a weekend and maybe a bivocational pastor. I mean, that's a pretty normative sort of experience. And so maybe you have 15, 20 kids in your church total, and the likelihood is that none of those are orphans or foster children. I mean, it's a rarity. And so I think part of it is just a lack of education and a lack of access to kids who are walking through those sort of environments and context. And so I think if we could just help people to understand, every community in the country has children who are orphans or fostered. And then when you start thinking on the global scale, and for my family, the global orphan crisis was pretty compelling. When you start thinking on the global scale and you start recognizing that there are many countries where it is not part of their culture at all to care for orphans, to adopt these children into their homes, I just think as followers of Jesus in the American church, where even if we don't think of ourselves as wealthy comparatively to the rest of the world, we are, we may need to sense and have a bigger sense of obligation to the global orphan crisis, to whom much is given, much is required, and we've been given much. And so I think a lot of it just has to do with lack of access, lack of information, lack of education, and a lack of awareness that their community struggles with those things, just like larger cities like Nashville or maybe even Boston, New York City, Chicago, Atlanta, those sort of things.
I have a little bit of a question about your experience, Micah. One of the things that I remember in West Africa was when people found out I was adopted, they thought that was odd, and they, you know, just from adult to adult would just say, oh, that's wrong. You shouldn't adopt. There should have been someone in your extended family. And they oftentimes saw it as a negative thing, that it should have just been, if my mom couldn't, biological mom couldn't raise me, then an aunt or a grandparent, that sort of thing. Is that I never experienced that growing up here in the States. Have you as parents experienced that either internationally or any very much negative feedback on the adoption process or experience?
So I would say overwhelmingly, we have been supported and experienced positive feedback. That doesn't mean exclusively we've experienced that, but overwhelmingly. So I want to say up front that the vast majority of our experiences have been really good, positive, affirming, and supportive. But there have been a few examples. I mean, there are those who, in evangelicalism over the last 15 years, there have been a number of books written on the topic of adoption. I can think of Tony Morita's book, Orphanology. I can think of Russ Moore's book, Adopted for Life. So you've got people like Tony Morita, Russ Moore, David Platt, Kevin Ezell, these sort of luminary names in evangelicalism that have adoptive children from both domestic and international context. And so I think as a result of that, there are some people who think, oh, well, if you're a couple who's adopting, you're just trying to do the hip, cool thing. So we've actually experienced that in a number of ways. People who sort of dismiss adoption as just kind of the thing in the moment. It's the thing that everybody wants to do, which is a tragic misunderstanding of adoption. If you understand how far you have to go through the process to adopt and how much money you have to spend, there's no way anybody does it to be hip and cool. So we have seen some of that. We have a multiracial family because our son is from a small kingdom in southern Africa, and so he's literally African American, and so there have been a little bit of that. You know, you'll get some racial overtones and even occasionally sort of an explicit racial statement that we've had to deal with, but by and large our experience has been really positive.
You mentioned earlier kind of children's homes that might be in a local community or that a denomination might support. What are some of the differences between, you know, that type of setting for foster care and an actual families fostering kids individually?
Yeah, that's a good question, Scott. So I would say really one of the major factors is just attention being paid to the children. Like, we have a children's home that's just down the road from our church. That's a denominational children's home that we affiliate with and we partner with. In fact, two of the parent, the house parents from that are members of our church, and they bring all of the kids from their home to our church. Now, it really is encouraging because it's a mom and a dad who live permanently in a home. So when we, in our context, I'm not talking about a big, huge building and all these kids piled in, you know, like dormitory situations. I think sometimes people imagine that. That's not the situation at all. It's homes all over a campus, moms and dads, you know, who commit to that home, and they're most of the time with them. They cycle out sometimes on a weekend for some rest and that sort of thing. But so, I mean, in a sense, that's a really encouraging, it's a good way to do an orphanage or something of that sort. The problem is the kids still don't have a permanent mom and dad. The kids are cycling in and out of that based on whether or not they get sent back to their birth parents or whether they get put into a foster care environment. And so there's a lack of stability for the kids. There's a lack of ownership at I want to be careful I say this, because the moms and dads, the house moms and the house dads, love and try and have ownership with the kids. But at the same time, they're generally a temporary solution. It's not a permanent solution for the kids. And so it's not the same thing as a mom and dad who are invested in you, having ownership of you, planning your future, planning your college education, going to be the grandparents that you bring your grandkids, but, you know, your kids back to see someday. And so it's just a different level of ownership, responsibility, accountability, and relationship. Foster care environments in an individual home with a mom and a dad can provide more of that. If the foster parents are good foster parents who love the kids, who are trying to, you know, seek the best interest of the kids. But even there, it's still a transient situation. Now, it's better than the children being on their own. For sure, it's better than that. But the best solution is adoption, you know, where they can have a mom and a dad who have ownership in some sense. I mean, I think you understand the way I'm using that word, but in the sense that the mom and dad feel accountable.
Responsible,
responsible for raising them, their future, what that's going to look like, and then just the relational connection. I mean, just for a child to feel loved and affirmed and wanted. These people wanted me. You know, I'm in an environment where I haven't been wanted, or for some reason I haven't been able to be in a home where somebody could want me and love me. And I mean, the trauma that these kids are walking through, I think most adults would flinch to think about going through in their own lives. And of course, the emotional baggage for children who aren't equipped to handle that emotional trauma, and to not have an adult who puts their arms around you and says to you, you're wanted, you're valued, you're loved, and we have a plan to help bless your future, to help you flourish in the future. When that's missing, I mean, it leads to children who are going to not get to experience everything that God designed families and children to experience as they grow old.
It really seems like the need is great enough that these homes and foster families and adoptive families are all part of that solution, and it's great to hear your church engaged in each of those.
Thanks, Micah. Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Really appreciate you having here. How can folks find you online on Twitter or website? What are some ways they can locate you if they want to learn more about you?
Sure. On Twitter, it's just my name, Micah Fries. It's M-I-C-A-H. Fries is spelled like fries, like French fries, F-R-I-E-S. So just at Micah Fries. On Facebook, it's at Paul Micah Fries. And online, it's MicahFries.com or BrainerdBaptist.org.
Excellent. We appreciate you and all you had to share today. This was great. And thanks to everyone who's listening. If you have any questions, please tweet to us at SMCon, at StatsGuyCasey, and at Lizette Tweets, or at Lifeway Research. Join us next time for an edition of Keep Asking. Keep asking, learn more, do better.